This is Fanboy versus Transformers with Chris, Brian Kilby, Rob Clay, and Chris Triplett.
All right, this is Fanboy versus Transformers, Episode 4. We're talking about More Than Meets the Eye, number 39 this week. Joining me, I have Rob Clay, Brian Kilby, and Chris Triplett. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Not bad.
Hey, how's it going?
I read a lot of Transformers comics today.
How many?
25 or so, something like that.
Nice.
Well, that's fantastic. No, it's really not. But,
no, it's not.
Is your brains melting out of your ears? I mean,
after reading Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 6, yeah. We'll talk about that, though, in another podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, which will probably be right after this one. Brian, obviously you're not an avid reader or a regular reader of More Than Meets the Eye, but Triplett, you keep up, don't you?
Mostly. I was a little behind. I think I was about 4 issues behind in it, and I got caught up on it today. But for the most part, I try to keep it up with it in chunks.
And I know Rob's on it every week or every month. You'd be on it every week if it was available that often.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's jump into it. So, 3 of the Decepticon Justice Division are attending to their work. Tarn, Tesseris, and Helix conduct the execution of Blip, while Tarn has a moment of inner reflection. Blip makes a final request for Tarn to remove his mask, a request refused as Tarn allows Tesseris and Helix to finish their work personally. Once they get back to their ship, they face the wrath of their medic, Nickel, who's quite annoyed with the relative states of disrepair they've returned in. Tarn orders Tesseris and Helix to report for performance evaluations after they've gotten the once-over from the doctor. So, Tarn is meeting with Tesseris, who Tarn recognizes is very uncomfortable with the process, and he's not alone. No one joined the DJD to deal with paperwork and personnel management, but Tarn believes that proper administrative procedures are the backbone that holds up the Decepticon Empire. Tesseris is preoccupied, though. Tarn presses him for his problem, even though he already really knows what it is. Tesseris is disturbed by having left Voss and Kaon behind after retreating from an engagement with the Black Bloc Consortia and the Galactic Council, which was precipitated by all three parties trying to salvage the wrecked Lost Light. Tesseris tries to remind Tarn, Decepticons don't leave each other behind, which kind of enrages Tarn. He grabs Tesseris and, using his talk you to death voice, warns him never to tell him what Decepticons do or don't do. But he releases Tesseris and says that he'd already ordered the ship returned to Ofsted 17 to retrieve their remains. But there's even better news! Helix bursts in at that very moment and reports Voss and Kaon are alive and have been transported aboard the ship. Their celebration is brief, though, as Helix hands over the copy of Tord's Peace that was taken from Trailcutter. It's the revised edition, and at seeing the new ending, Tarn is kind of destroyed inside, unable to cope with Megatron having abandoned the Decepticons. Later on Messatine, Tarn is outside, alone. Replaying Megatron's speech renouncing the Decepticons, he removes his mask and stares into it, trying to find any meaning to it now that Megatron's given up. As he reaches the end of Megatron's speech, telling the Decepticons to free themselves from the flawed philosophy, Tarn summons Kaon to the fueling chamber. In one of the mine shafts, Tarn is hooked into a refueling capsule. He's being infused with Nuke, a rare variant of the nucleon that lines the walls of the mine, which was changed after exposure to temporal energy. Nickel wants to pull Tarn out of the capsule, afraid of damage being caused by overfueling, but as Kaon indicates, Tarn knows what he's doing, and it's exactly what he wants. Tarn has nearly gotten his wish and is close to death from overexposure to the nuke. In his last moments, he flashes back to his past, and notes how the experience of dying is actually kind of disappointing. But just as his spark begins to shrink, he sees Nickel on the other side of the chamber and has a moment of clarity. He breaks out, saying it's time for a new plan. Much later, the cloaked, peaceful tyranny has entered orbit with a war world. It belonged to Deathsaurus, who stole the ship when he decided to leave Megatron's service, leading to him and all of his followers ending up on the DJD's list. Helix believes that's why they've gone there. Voss confirms several hundred Decepticons on board, causing Helix to worry they'll be detected if they aren't careful. It's only then that Tarn says Deathsaurus is expecting them. Tarn and his team meet Deathsaurus on the war world. Deathsaurus mentions they're working to upgrade the ship's engines and suggests Tarn could help out, tossing a large crate to him. They go to have a private conversation, but before Tarn can say much, Deathsaurus asks him to step back a bit, explaining he's worried he may not have properly accounted for the blast radius. Tarn looks down and sees the crate labeled as explosives just before Deathsaurus detonates it in his hands. A quick fight ensues before Tarn uses his voice to compel Deathsaurus to stop. The Surus tries to mute his audios to block it, but Tarn is also on their internal communication channel. He offers a brief history of the Decepticons as a preamble. When the Surus questions him on reciting facts everyone knows, Tarn gets to the real point. Megatron is done, but he finally realizes the Decepticons are bigger than Megatron. He may have been where the message started, but it has a life of its own now. He realized this through Nicol adopting their philosophy and becoming a Decepticon after her colony fell. The Surus wants to know what Tarn is after, and it's simple. The major powers in the galaxy are after the Transformers, determined to wipe them all out. Tarn wants the Surus and his crew to join with the DJD to destroy the Council, the Black Bloc Consortia, and anyone else who stands as a threat. But before all that, there's one thing left to do. Tarn declares that Megatron himself now is not only on the list, he is the list. But once that's taken care of, it's time to go to war. So, for the first time, we've really gotten, like, a personal look at the DJD. Like, my very first bullet point for this episode was that they've basically been the Borg on Star Trek Voyager until this point, where every time they appear and have to be made to leave without killing most or all of the main characters, the level of threat they represent is greatly reduced. Do you think this issue is helping to redefine them so they can become something more than just a decreasingly effective plot device?
I hope so. I mean, the DJD are... Gosh, I mean, the Borg is a really good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of any, like, almost, maybe, I guess, like, the Wreckers, too, even though the Wreckers are more effective. You know, there's not that many, really menacing characters out there that have been as ineffectual as the DJD. Mm-hmm. And giving them some teeth is really a promising development. I really hope that happens.
Triple, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I kind of felt like it, that. Yeah, this was sort of like the humanizing or relating issue for the DJD, because like, and it's kind of like comical too, because like throughout the issue, you see like how they do live their lives when they're not murdering the heck out of Decepticons, and you kind of you see like, oh, well, they're just kind of like just doing what they normally do. They're just living their lives like, you know, normal people, even though they're mass murderers. And then like it's supposed to be a relatable kind of a scene, but then you go back, well, the issue began with they were trying to feed a bot his brain. So it's kind of comical, you know, in several mm-hmm. spots and how you look at it. But yeah, I totally agree with that.
You're right. There is like a farcical element to it, but you know, like what's happened with Megatron over the last several issues, I mean, some people are probably going to see this as being a similar thing, but yeah, Megatron's trying to go on a road to redemption where the DJD is very much committed to what they are and what they do, but we're still being given the same kind of, like you guys are saying, humanizing focus on them to actually make them be people. Rob, what do you think about this?
You know, I don't think I got the decreasing effectiveness to, in their previous appearances to the degree that everybody else did. I mean, the last time we saw the whole group, they did kind of murder everyone on the other Lost Light.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would totally agree that they're decreased in effectiveness, because every time that they've appeared, there's been some loss, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of a time when they, at least, even if it was just one character from the group appeared, that there wasn't some sort of a loss. Was there a time when they showed up when there was not something that was lost?
Not that I can think of.
I think they've done some damage every time they've made an appearance.
And matter of fact, I kind of think we're actually setting them up to become less effective in the future, because we've established the nuke, which there's a finite amount of, and I kind of think we're setting up the long run just some kind of avenue where they actually could be defeated, which in terms of the narrative so far, we've really not seen that as being a possibility.
See, my take on them being decreasingly effective is that, you know, in terms of the story, they're always presented as the DJD are unstoppable. If they show up, everyone dies. But more times than not, they've shown up and one or two people may have been killed or severely damaged in the process. But something always makes them leave before they can finish the job, which really kind of diminishes the sort of threat you feel reading the stories about them.
I got gotcha.
They still have that whole boogeyman status, though, mm-hmm. because like as soon as Death Saris, you know, hears he's coming, you know, the whole, you know, here's the bomb in the box, you know, it's like, I ain't gonna take it. You know, I'm going to make sure that I take as many of you out as I can before I go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he's scared to death, you know.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah,
Is Deathsaurus a Phase Sixer?
You know, I don't know. Deathsaurus has not appeared before, so far as I'm aware. So, his inclusion is new.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's even been mentioned before, so.
Yeah, I was, like, especially early on with all these Japanese
was he
Synthetic
not
Autobots.
Last Stand of the Wreckers? I want to say maybe he got mentioned.
I'm pretty sure he was mentioned at some point.
I think he was mentioned at some point, but I don't think we've ever seen him or heard anything about him.
Well, I'm not sure he's even been mentioned just because, you know, going to the wiki, there is not an IDW continuity section for his page, so.
Okay, all right. I'm not a wiki, so I will go with that.
You're a Chris, but you're not a McFeely.
Exactly. God, I can't be a McFeely.
No, but like that's what really drew me to the comparison with how the Borg were played in Star Trek Voyager, where like, you know, in the dialogue, in the universe's sense, the Borg are the biggest threat ever, but every time they show up, it's just like, well, just kind of, you know, make them go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they yeah. did lose their teeth after a while, and the DJD may have gotten completely to that point, but I felt like they were on that road.
Yeah, that they pretty much had to pick something new to do with them before they started, you know, losing their menace. Because, I mean, either they kill everybody or they don't, which means you can only get them so close to the main cast.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, since they exist pretty much exclusively in this book, yeah, you can do side story stuff like the Scavenger story arc that introduced them in the first place, but it's really hard to involve them with the main story that's going on without totally undermining them.
Yes, unless, of course, like I said, you have an alternate ship that you can kill everybody on.
In which case you've undermined them because there's no actual consequences to the cast we're following.
Hmm.
Or at least not significant ones.
Yeah.
And it was a sad day to be an alternate Transformers fan comic reader in that alternate universe.
Okay, so at the end of the issue, Tarn decides that before they do anything else, they need to go deal with Megatron and kill the Lost Light again because make sure the job's done right for once. But I'm kind of disappointed by that because, like, what they're presenting of assembling these hundreds of Decepticons who have not observed the Sandown Order, like probably most haven't, and are now allied with the DJD to deal with threats against their race, like, I think that's a more compelling story setup than just going and killing Megatron and all the crew on the Lost Light. Is anybody else kind of feeling the same way about that?
Go ahead.
It kind of is, but at the same time, it would have that problem of keeping them on the periphery and keeping them dealing with things that don't actually deal with the, you know, main part of the book, which you can only do for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It does, you know, going after Megatron first does kind of have that smack of narrative inevitability to it, though. You know, it's they're doing it because it's the thing everybody expected them to do.
Right. Triplet, what were you going to go for?
Oh, I was just going to say that, yeah, I can see how that would be a sort of a disappointing way to end the book, but I'm kind of trying to think, like, his world has just basically collapsed,
mm-hmm.
and everything he believes in has just basically collapsed, and he's working off of emotion, so when you're working off of emotion, that sort of would be, you would go to that line of sight, you would be like, what do I need to do, who do I need to confront to take care of this?
You know, that's a really good point, and I agree with that. Like, my level of disappointment is just, like, one sounds like a lot more interesting story hook. Because, like Rob says, it's inevitable that they're going to go confront Megatron, but, you know, the way things are going to go, you can't really continue with what they're wanting to do when they go and don't kill Megatron and everybody on the Lost Light, because obviously they can't.
Yeah.
They can't?
Not everybody.
They can kill some of them.
I mean, yeah, they can kill someone, but they can't kill Megatron and everybody else like they're intending to.
Maybe we can just find an alternate universe Lost Light.
Yeah.
And
already had a quantum duplicate Lost Light, so why not just go and grab one out of an alternate universe and
aren't there several inside
the suitcase or the briefcase?
We'll make the running trait of the DJD that they kill Lost Lights all the time, but it's never the right one.
Yeah. I would watch that show. It was basically Quantum Leap with the DJD murdering your...
Oh, that would be awesome.
I was thinking more like Sliders, which is considerably less awesome, but, you know.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, same basic idea. No. As you were talking about, I was just like thinking the Quantum Leap opening, but with the details changed. Jumping from ship to ship, each time hoping their next leap will be the one they're supposed to kill.
And then the last episode, they end up in a bar with a bunch of weird characters.
Macadam's Bar?
Yeah. Oh my god, it writes itself.
You know, I was already thinking with this issue that, like, the voice of Tarn in my head has changed with this issue because he's more of a person now.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to start reading him with Scott Bakula's voice.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Scott Bakula needs the work, right?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I think before this, he was Grandpa Simpson for me, so...
Like, before this, Tarn just had, like... the really generic, menacing, deep-voiced villain kind of voice. Because that's all that he was presented as.
And now he's starting to have layers. He's starting to be have yeah. going on with them. Did you notice, like, at the end of the issue, the Decepticon mask is crumbling more?
It was damaged heavily in the fight with Deathsaurus, but it seemed fairly symbolic, too.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. I thought that was a little touch.
Through Nichols' quick backstory, we find out the galaxy's major powers are going after the Transformers, including the Lost Colonies. Do you think this is going to get picked up on in the other books down the line?
I would think so, wouldn't it? I mean, that's a pretty big deal, it seems like, so why wouldn't it be?
I think it's a pretty natural fit to fit into Combiner Wars as we go on, because, you know... they've already suggested the formation of a galactic count of basically a council of Transformer worlds, and in response to a threat like this would be a very good reason to have one of those.
I mean, this is like reading the solicitations, getting a little bit off track here. The solicitations for Windblade after the Combiner Wars event is over with, like, it seems like the ongoing story is going to be establishing contact with the colony world, so it seems like This could be, like, a preview of story elements in the overall universe to come. And the IDW universe has made a lot of mention to how basically every other civilization hates the Transformers, and I think it could be interesting to see that come to a head in an active sense, rather than isolating them from the rest of the galactic community.
Yeah, and I did like how they tied that into Megatron's overall philosophy in this issue and made it the reason that he wanted to go around basically killing anything that wasn't a Transformer.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought it was a little bit over-convenient at a couple points here, like just when Vossenkan happened to return at the most convenient moment possible to the narrative. Since readers already knew they would return alive from issue 33, I think, it felt like the story in the issue kind of got the short end of the stick on that.
It probably would have been better if they would have just been there from the beginning when they were torturing that guy.
It
just assumed that they must have picked them up right after that issue, you know?
I think the only reason they didn't... I think, like, they showed up when they did because it was necessary to have Tarn see the revised edition of Towards Peace for the first time on panel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that really motivates the rest of the issue. Like, I don't know how it could go differently, but, you know, yeah, it seemed too convenient they arrived at just that time when they were talking about the whole thing anyway, and... there needed to be another way to introduce that element to make it seem more believable. That was a big problem I had with this.
Yeah, and it would be kind of a hard way to have introduced it without actually have them show up and be back with them without being like a part of the story. Because the way the story is now, you've got the sort of like the beginning. It's like we're just the DJD. We're doing awful things, and then you also have the parallel of him thinking about what they're doing later on at the issue and the stuff with Nickel. You know, I don't know how they could have done that. I mean, I am not a writer. I don't know if I could have done it better, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know how to solve that problem any better than what they did.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm disappointed that, you know, there was this whole dance around the mask, and like you pointed out, at the end it was crumbling. There's a lot of focus and symbolism put on that, but, you know, by the end of the issue, they still hadn't fully shown his face.
Yeah.
And, like, more than anything else, this issue is about Tarn and his change in view, and I really think dropping the mask could have been very naturally integrated into this.
Yeah, one of the things going with the mask that I noticed, and we talk about this change of view, but then it kind of seems like there's this other view that he had that maybe we didn't know about, unless it's something that I didn't notice in previous issues, More Than Meets the Eye. But there's the comment that I go back to, which I thought was really interesting, where he had mentioned that when he basically turns over Decepticons to his group to do more like barbaric things. The real reason he wears the mask is so they can't see him closing his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting.
But yeah,
I didn't know where they were going with that. Like, you know, if this is just like a big change of his views after hearing about Megatron, it kind of sounds like he already had kind of some views about not really wanting to do this, but being so devoted that he kind of has to force himself to do it.
Although I could see it also, like, basically at the end of this, I'm seeing, like, the DJD's mission statement has mostly changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least in the short term, they're more focused on stopping the forces that want to kill their race outright. And stopping off and finishing off Megatron as the last entry on the list is just, it's a personal thing at this point.
Right.
And I think with that, like, he would not have a problem with, you know, hiding his reaction under the mask. And it, excuse me, it may very well be when this gets revisited, when they do catch up with the other Lost Light and catch up with Megatron, the mask will come off at that point. As,
I would think it would have to in order to that to make more sense.
I mean,
hasn't there been speculation in the past that Tarn is someone significant under the mask?
Roller.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, why? All right, like, there's like going to be two reasons why someone would wear the mask.
Yeah.
And usually it's because it's a character you don't expect it to be, or it's because something is really off about that dude's face. You know,
practically nothing in this book happens by accident. And if there's if we have not seen all of Tarn's face yet, there is a reason.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, revealing Tarn as Roller would have the most impact to Optimus, and I think it would end up being pretty far-fetched for Optimus to just happen to be on the Lost Light when the DJD comes calling eventually whenever they catch up.
Yeah. Well, there's another option, which is that there is another person on the ship that would probably have some significance as to Roller's identity. And that would be Ratchet, whose face is real big on next issue's cover.
True. I don't think the DGD is going to catch up that fast, but
no. But if we're setting things up in the long term, and we're starting, you know, if we're pushing toward the focus on Ratchet, that could make some sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I would, as long as there is like, as long as there is a natural and I guess thematic connection for him to remove the mask at a specific time that feels like it goes with the flow of what's happening and nothing's being put in place to just artificially build up the tension or the drama of the reveal. That's basically what I'm afraid of. And, like, you know, the book's track record, I really shouldn't be worrying too much about that. It's just, like, the factors I'm seeing, if Tarn is Roller, as is generally the speculation, you know, that seems like a hard thing to really give the weight it needs at the time in the place it's going toward without it seeming really forced.
Yeah.
On more positive notes, how about the art? Hayato Sakamoto did the interiors for this issue, and I was really quite pleased with this. He did really good staying consistent with the normal art style while still bringing his own style into it a little bit.
Yeah. That close-up when Tarn sees that Megatron is defected is absolutely beautiful.
Yes,
yeah,
and the coloring on that, too.
Uh-huh. That is amazing.
Yeah. So Sakamoto had done the BotCon 2014 comic, which had certain stylistic choices that not everybody was comfortable with. None of that was present here, but like there, like some faces were very clearly in Sakamoto's style. Nickel, especially, almost every face she was drawn with.
You know, I haven't read that other comic, but yeah, when you were saying like things in style, the one thing that really stands out is Nickel's face. Mm-hmm. Like when you see it, you're like, wow, that's like, it's like a. You're in a totally different universe from the rest of these characters.
Well, okay, so like if you look at the flashback to when they're talking to Brainstorm and he's got his faceplate off,
yeah,
like that's another really Sakamoto face there.
Okay,
the only weird thing I found with this was when Tarn and Deathsaurus were in panels together, they both looked a lot shorter and wider than they should have. was I the only one that picked up on that?
I didn't even catch that, honestly.
I'm
looking at an image right now of Deathsaurus, and I think I see what you're talking about. He does look kind of weird.
Yeah.
Proportion-wise.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure why that happened just there, and like everything else through the rest of the issue, all the proportions look normal, but just here they both look like halfway SD-ified.
Yeah, he's very stocky. That's interesting. It's almost like it's a Pat Lee like knee or lower leg, but protracted to like the whole proportion of the body.
Well, okay, so like in the panel where Deathsaurus tosses the crate over to Tarn, there is kind of a dreamwave pose to Tarn there, but that kind of makes sense since he's recoiling from the thing being thrown at him. But like Deathsaurus in that is standing straight up, and he still looks really short and really wide. To me, most glaring art issue in terms of like the line art. And then Joanna LaFuente did the colors as is usual, and it looks really good. There's at least a few places where I think there should have been like highlights, light spill off of stuff, and there wasn't. So that, I mean, it looked a little bit more flat than I think it should have, but I really like her color work on the book in general, and especially with Sakamoto's line work, they seem to play really well together.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah. Three covers for this. The main cover it basically spoils half the ending with Deathsaurus big and prominent on there, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
The subscription cover is a Nick Roche piece where it's the pad with Towards Peace on the ground, and you see Tarn's reflection in it. I kind of like this for the thematic element of it, and I also like the shadowy coloring, like the nighttime palette on it. It gives it that really moody feel.
Yeah, I like that one.
But, like, by far my favorite is the Retailer Incentive cover by Sarah Petrie DeRocher, who yeah. I still don't know if I'm saying her name right, and I'm sorry if I'm not, but that is a beautiful piece of art.
It really is.
It's the DJD propaganda poster.
Oh, that is beautiful. I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I would love to have that on my wall.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
In fact, what's the resolution on this photo here? I'm not sure.
Well, with any luck, you know, if she makes convention appearances this year, maybe she will be, you know, bringing prints of the original of that for sale.
It's beautiful.
I mean, yes. I would buy that. That is a really nice piece of art. She's done a lot of retailer incentive covers lately, and I'm just always disappointed that I can never have that.
Yeah.
Because I don't even have a local comic shop. And if I did, they wouldn't order enough books to get one where I could get the retailer incentive.
Now, if you buy the Comixology version, you'll get that. Because I think you get all of them. I don't know if it matters or not. Because I think whenever I've gotten an issue from Comixology, because I bought like a trade a while back, I think, from them, I think it had all of the covers in it. So I don't know if the individual issues do. But you can kind of scan through them, which I think is pretty cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm. No, but like Kilby saying, you know, some of these I would like to just have in a print form.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the past, I have gotten a little picture frame and put a comic book in it because I like the cover art and put it on the wall.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do that. Yeah.
you know, so like I would like to have access to some of these retailer incentive covers just on that basis, because if you can get them, it's a good way to get at least, it's not big on the wall, obviously, but, you know, it's good enough.
Well, you know, the one that IDW has posted to their Tumblr, the resolution on that's actually pretty good. I mean, if you wanted to print that out, you could make a pretty decent sized print of that. So,
how big do you think it would print out?
Well, it's 1280 pixels wide, so it's much taller than that. So, I mean, you would be able to get something that's at least 8.5 by 11 out of it. So, if you trim it, it'd be about the size of a comic.
That's not too bad, actually. Something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah.
Do we have any more thoughts on this issue?
I like it. It's not my favorite issue that I've read today of all the
dozens. Well, you have a sort of interesting perspective there.
Yeah. You've got the best and the worst.
Yeah.
All together at one time.
So I've read the first year and a half already, and I was way behind, so I read it again and read, you know, most of the rest, skipping basically Dark Cybertron to get to where I'm at now, which apparently is not that big of a deal. Nope. So it's not my favorite issue I've read in a while, but I like it.
By no means like a terrible issue. It's very good.
No, and like, I think it gives a lot of interesting possibilities for future stories that I'm eager to see explored. Maybe not in the order they're being presented, but I'm still eager to see them explored.
I eagerly anticipate Tarn joining the Lost Light, because I think it's going to happen.
Oh.
Yet, I don't know what else to believe in. I guess you're the co-captain.
You know, like,
but yeah, James Roberts has been talking on Twitter basically of the next 10 issues as kind of a block story wise. So that gives us a fair amount of room to work with what we're setting up here.
Can I ask you guys a question, since you're way more in the know of this stuff? So More Than Meets the Eye is not going to be involved in Combiner Wars at all. Is that right?
No. Right.
Okay. Because I know they kind of dropped in an issue and they were like in it was an issue of the other Transformers book, and I thought it was basically them saying, "Yeah, we're not going to be there. Bye."
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, it seems like they're not shoehorning and More Than Meets the Eye in the Combiner Wars they have with Dinosaur Month, Dinobot Month, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and see, like they pretty much like lampshade the reasoning for that too in the dialogue. You know, you can't really have a quest if you're going back home every other month to do something and then starting over.
Yeah, the joke is like, you know, you can't end the quest if you keep coming back home. He's like, you can't begin the quest.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they said they were going to send representatives, which, since basically all the Protectobots have been on the Lost Light and it's Combiner Wars, we can kind of guess who the representatives that are being sent are.
Yeah.
So I guess all in all of this issue, the one disappointing thing, and you can't feature the Lost Light in every issue. The dynamic between all the characters on the Lost Light is just so darn fantastic that when you have an issue that doesn't feature them, mm-hmm. it's a little bit of a letdown.
I mean, yeah. I kind of like those issues, though. I really like the issues where they kind of take a break. And then, like I can't remember. God, it's been several issues back, but it was the group of Decepticons that the DJD went after.
The Scavengers, that was 7 and 8. Yeah. That was years ago, Chris.
Yeah, like, I love that issue.
It's a great issue. Oh, it's a great issue. Don't get me wrong.
And it's just about these schmoes, basically. They're like Decepticon schmoes. There's like one guy that turns into a bomb. That's a shit job, I can tell you right there.
But so much has happened, and the characters have developed so much, and it's so much more rich now than it was. Yeah. If it's not featuring the Autobots on the Lost Light, Autobots / Decepticons on the Lost Light, it's, you know, a little bit of a letdown. But I still enjoyed it. I definitely want to see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the characters on the Lost Light have a great interplay. It's always fun to watch. But, you know, I like seeing that same energy applied to other characters that have not had that benefit so far. So, I'm with Triplett. I really like issues like this that focus on a different group for a little bit.
It's a nice diversion just to kind of, like, redirect. And then when you come back to the Lost Light, I mean, you miss them, and it's something to kind of I assume the next issue we'll get the Lost Light, and it'll be like right back to it, and it'll be mm-hmm. all right, here's my friends, they're back again, here's them on another wacky adventure. I don't
but well yeah. yeah, we should get the answer to that around the end of the month, so unless it's delayed again. 39 was delayed for a few weeks, so never can be too sure.
Not as bad as Transformers versus G.I. Joe keeps getting delayed.
So it's April now. Yeah. And that means that issue zero came out 11 months ago.
Really? Yep.
Free comic book day.
Jesus.
And so
it's almost time for another free comic book day.
Yeah, issue six. Yeah, so it's wow. It's about every other month.
If they're lucky.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for us for this episode. Guys, thank you for being here, and the rest of you, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for another episode of Fanboy vs. Transformers.
Need to catch up? Visit tfradio.net/Amazon and start shopping for collected volumes of all the Transformers titles. For comic book news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com. Fanboy vs. Transformers is a Radio Free Cybertron production.